Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Kael Shows Unplugged. We're just going to jump right into the action. First, we're going to start off with Inter's 3-2 victory over Napoli. My thoughts on this match, holy crap on it, has Penny from Big Bang Theory would say, holy crap on a cracker. That match was pretty much back and forth. Throughout the whole match, both teams were really fighting to the nail till the very end, but obviously Inter get the victory. Obviously this is another win in regards to helping them keep on track with the title race, which at for a little bit of time, obviously we're still going to be in the title race forever, but there were times where Inter that was threatened based on some of the performances Inter have given off over the past few weeks, but yet they're out here helping solidify their title race hope for a little bit longer. Obviously, hopefully December is good to us. I don't want to go back to being that team that goes on a losing streak for 7 matches in a row. I can't do that again. It's not medically safe for me. Yeah, you want to see Danielle have a heart attack.
Literally happened once, and you bring it up every single year.
But yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, I don't want that again. But yeah, I mean, this is just another great way for Inter to maintain that position in the title race. Obviously, there's the finishing still is starting to become an issue again, but obviously they're starting to slowly work on that. And obviously we'll talk about their other match later on, but this was definitely a great win for them, despite it being a back and forth effort. And I will give props to Nico. He actually told me, Inter, as much as I hate Inter, I hope you guys beat crappily tonight so I can hear them complain or something. So respect Nico.
I said the same thing. I was same thing. I was Instagramming with an Inter person, and I was basically saying I thanked him for Inter winning because it's weird. Me and Nico are kind of in the same boat where we hate Inter, but we hate Napoli more a bit. So it's a strange dynamic. In regards to that, but I felt exactly the same. If every other any other game they play, I'm again unless it's against Lazio, I'll cheer I'll cheer for Inter against Lazio and Napoli, and that's it. So but this was a rare occurrence where I wanted them to win. I wanted you guys to play horrible but win, but I still wanted you to win the game.
I'll still take that though.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were going to say something else.
No.
All right. I guess I'll go. It was, this game did end up being, a 3-2 victory for Inter, but I never watching the game yesterday. When I saw the game and the performances and how everything was going. I'd never had any sort of reservations about Inter getting the points. They seem to be, I wouldn't say in control, but they seem to be confident in as far as the way they were playing, confident in the performance. And other than like there was a stretch when I mean Zielinski, that goal, then he scored the first goal for Napoli was incredible. Really well taken shot from outside the box. That was insane. Caught me totally off guard when he scored that. And then after that, there was a little bit of a stretch where Napoli were kind of pushing it off. But then obviously Inter get back into the game. They find their ways to be effective. And so on and so forth. It was a really kind of dodgy first part of the game. And again, I know Zielinski basically had a rocket attached to his foot when he scored the first goal. But Dzeko's losing possession in that area I was like, uh-oh, this ain't good. And, you can't blame that necessarily on him per se. And obviously he played better in the other game, but to lose possession in that area is something I think you need to, be aware of, just because, things like that can happen. And in other areas where it's not forcing a long shot, even though he scored, you can't look at it like it's not down to that, but in other situations, in any other scenario, it would be down to that mistake and losing possession in that area. It's incredibly dangerous to do that. And obviously Inter get it back. They end up breaking through with, I think Lautaro scored, if I'm not mistaken. I watched this game late last night, so I don't totally remember the goal scorers. But after they take that after they get the goal back, then there's a lot of momentum riding with Inter. They get into the dangerous spaces. They're effective, and they're able to break it down, and they get into those areas, like I said, and they score their goals, and all of a sudden it's 3-1, and Inter kind of in a way where they feel quite precise about what's happening, and the momentum is all with them. And then obviously Mertens happens, comes off the bench, scores for Napoli, and then it becomes a little bit more complicated. Osimhen goes off injured, out for 2 months for Napoli, so that's a big blow. And then the last 15 or 20 minutes was scary, because it did really look like Napoli was going to come back and potentially get something from that. And the chance, the very end, I think it was a 94th minute, the cross coming across to Mertens and nearly scoring, and almost kind of coming back from 3-1 down to get a point would have been a huge result. But I think Inter have Napoli are kind of not exposing themselves, but they're not this team that their fans have been claiming that they are. Even though I really rate those jerseys that they were wearing. But you look at the situation, Inter, as much as you want to say, okay, they didn't beat AC Milan, but they got something from that game. And then you look on the other side of things. Now you go and beat Napoli. It's, they're really starting to formulate as a team. And, we know Milan lost. I still think they're probably the hottest team in the league, followed by Atlanta. But Inter are closing the gap at the top of the table, with Napoli and AC Milan both dropping points. It was an opportunistic chance for Inter Milan, and obviously they came through and they were able to do what they were, what obviously they wanted, because, like you said, they're going to be in a title race. This is just obvious, but they're now starting to break down as far as get those points back, and with other teams dropping around, they're continuing to make up ground, and this Serie A is going to be the title race is going to be a long one this season, but they're positioning themselves well, at least especially coming off that victory, and that's two big games in which they got something where previously this season they haven't really done so.
Well, I'm going to say something I haven't said in a while in regards to how the title race goes this season. I'm going to need some snacks. I haven't said that in forever, but I had to. So in speaking of Atalanta won 5-2 against Spezia.
Yeah, I mean, every time you watch Atalanta play, there are two things that there's always intrigue. There's always something extraordinary happening, because they play an incredibly attractive brand of football with some of the best players in the league that they have there. But they also, there's also opportunities for it to be a shootout, because defensively, ever since they lost Castagna to Leicester City a few years ago, their defense isn't as good. And then obviously they had Romero, who was great last year. He's gone. So they're always going to concede, but they're always going to score, which makes it a very end-to-end type of game. and so on. But, you know, there were moments in this game where it was slightly difficult. I mean, I believe Spezia scored first, and getting them in that position, they desperately need points. And then obviously you see Palace, I think it was Palacic, scored that goal. It was great. But the brilliance of that goal was I mean, I know that I talk about this guy a lot, but Zapata's decision making in that situation was exceptional, because now he didn't get an assist or a goal there. He did make the outside pass before the ball came in, and Zapata's in space where the ball is coming his direction, and he realizes that the guy behind him is in a better position, so he lets the ball go through his legs to basically tee it up for I forgot who scored, but they teed it up for his teammate who put it in the back of the net, and I think that's an extremely high level of intelligence. Then they're back in the game, and Alonso are moving. Handball in the box. Zapata steps up, misses the penalty, but the goalkeeper's off the line. And then so, again, he has to take it again. And this time he scores it. They go into it 2-1. And it's a pretty back-and-forth game for basically the rest of the way. It's really close. And you look at the score 5-2. A lot of those goals came very late in that game. And so it was a battle at times. It was a narrow victory for most of the game. And then obviously Alonso go crazy. And then they score another three in the second half. They might have scored one of the three goals in the first half, but it wasn't a simple victory throughout the entire game. There was concerning moments, and then obviously Nzola gets a late goal to give them two. But in the grand scheme of things, Spezia needed points. Even if they lost a 7-5, it wouldn't have mattered, because obviously you look at the situation and they just need points. So even if they got two instead of losing 5-0, it's better than losing 5-2 is better than losing 5-0. But for Spezia, it does them no good, even if they got two goals against one of the best attacking sides in the league. But, you know, great game. Alonso continued to roll. They continue to look like a real threat in this league. And Zapata continues to play really well. So I think what's happening in Bergamo just continues to be sort of repeating what we've seen the last couple of years. And this is another really good performance. Not their best, but certainly good enough. Seeing a Muriel come off the bench and score was good. And so there's a lot of compact things that are going on with Alonso. There's still room for improvement. They shouldn't be letting two goals in against a team like Spezia, who has mutually one player who can score. But all things considered, another good victory for the boys in Bergamo.
Yeah, there's only three things guaranteed in life: death, taxes, and Juvan Zapata kicking ass. Those are the only things guaranteed in life. But anyway, yeah, I mean, Spezia needed the points, but at least it wasn't a total washout for them, which would have been totally humiliating and embarrassing. But obviously, Atalanta are on a roll. Yes, there were times where it was a strongly contested matchup, but overall, Atalanta is one of those teams that, even if they're 2-0 down, can muster up enough, like, a strength and muster up, like, a really good plan of attack and get back into the match and pull off the victory. And in this scenario, it's just one of those, it just proves that point, that there are certain teams that no matter if they drop goals early, they know exactly what is needed to get that job done. So whether it's adjusting the formation a little bit or just moving a particular player from more of from like the back of the pitch to a little bit higher up, depending on where the ball is being serviced at the time. So, I mean, it's just those small things that they figure out throughout the match that sees them get back into those situations where they're pulling off the points. So, I mean, And Atalanta, time and time again, is just one of those teams that, regardless of how they start the game, they finish the match strong. And it's the end. I mean, you wouldn't expect anything less from them.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Atalanta's rolling right now. They're on fire. Zabata looks like the best player in the league. But I mean, as good as this is, how much of a concern is, and we know this about, we like, you know how, you know, Inzaghi has his own formation, his own back three, and it works some of the time, and it's kind of confusing, where Conte in the back three and Simeone in the back three, it's a very clear agenda. The thing about Atlanta is their weakness is also clear. They understand and they go with the flow as far as those situations. They know they can outscore you, but they're willing to accept the fact that they're going to concede. With Atlanta's – and again, the defense isn't bad. It's not like – I don't know. It's not like – I mean, a lot of teams at the bottom. But do you think that's something that they should be a little concerned about, even if they continue to win? Because you can't be in these situations in big games and go down. So how concerned are you with that aspect of it?
I would be a little concerned because if you're starting, that is kind of like a way you're exposing yourself, like your kinks in the armor. And obviously when another team faces another team like a week later, so say, for example, Atalanta are going up against hypothetical Fiorentina for the hell of it. Fiorentina is gonna look at previous tapes and like and stuff going on in the current season and see where the weaknesses are. So, I mean, this is kind of exposing those weaknesses that in the future other teams can exploit. So, I mean, you have to be very careful. Yes, you can go with the flow, but at what cost? So, I mean, you need to kind of get a little bit – obviously, you can still have that kind of mentality a little bit, but you need to have more of a concrete plan going forward.
Yeah, for sure. And one more thing on this. I find it – do you find it weird that – I mean, it's – obviously, it's obvious what they don't do particularly well. And there's two sizes. You can say, "Oh, Gasperini just—he's like, okay, we're gonna concede, but we're still gonna score all these great goals." But on the other side, do you think potentially that they should be hiding their weaknesses a little bit more? Because when you see Atalanta play, it's obvious what their weaknesses are from the first minute. You see deficiencies back there constantly, and obviously this system is very predicated on the attacking style from the wingbacks, especially. And obviously Gosens is more known for his attacking abilities than his defensive. But in more, I guess, important games, do you think potentially the wingback should drop I'm not saying don't go forward, but drop back a little bit to give more support? Because obviously they play a very attacking style. We get that. But at the same time, they have Zabata up top, and they have guys who can feed him the ball. So do you feel like maybe the wingback should be, I guess, less aggressive? And obviously aggressiveness is a lot of what they do, but at times. I'm not saying all the time, but occasionally, because I feel like this is going to be a problem. They probably would have won the league. One of these years had the defense been more of in shape. And again, they're a Champions League team for sure. They can chase down the title, but this is something that certainly could definitely contribute of why they won't be able to.
I mean, yeah, I think having those wing backs moving into more of the defense position to assist the defense would help them going forward, because I mean, their back three is already weak as it is on its own. But if you had those center backs, I mean, the wing backs, my bad, fall back a little bit to kind of be a little bit of a supportive system. Obviously, the wing backs are notorious for being able to play in both attacking and defensive positions. I mean, you have to be able to move back and forth between the two depending on the situation. Like, if you see the defense is in trouble, drop them back. But if you see they're doing at least decent, obviously move them up a little bit, but still have them close to that defense where in case there's a situation where your goal area is being, like, attacked aggressively, you then drop them back again, because without that support from the wing backs, it's just going to be detrimental going forward, especially since a lot of teams know the defense of Atalanta is not that strong to begin with. So you kind of need to have, a balance of knowing when to move them forward and when to drop them back.
Yeah, 100%. You're right about that. And I think it's like, it's not even like they have to turn into Virgil van Dijk on the side. But they should be able to assist a little bit. And I'm going to, again, a little biased here, but I think obviously on the wing back front, you have guys like Spinazzola, you've got Zurich Karsdorp, you have Hakimi from last year, Theo Hernandez to extent. He's a right back, but he plays like a wing back. And the thing that Rick Karsdorp doesn't specifically, he's decent enough. He's good enough defensively as a right back to be able to not make horrible mistakes. He doesn't really make too many mistakes, but he's not elite defensively, but he is elite in the attacking sense. But the one thing that I notice, and it's something you should look at when you're watching Roma in the future, is it's not that Rick is exceptionally gifted in defensive areas, but he has the athleticism and stamina not to say, okay, I'm going to lock you up, but has those spurts where he can just get the ball off the defender. Because I think Atalanta doesn't need to – the wingbacks don't need to stop anyone, but they need to have at least a spurt where they can just get the ball. Because once they get the possession back, then they're fine. Because unless you're playing Napoli or Inter, you're probably going to have an advantage in possession because of the way they play. So I think the wingbacks, really, to be really effective, don't need to lock anybody up. They just need to be there, be able to arrive at the right time to take the ball away off the opponent.
Exactly. Obviously, those videos from that guy who does those TikTok videos is going to definitely help me with this stuff going forward.
And I want you to – I mean, the two that I sent you, because I think we should just kind of do it as it is. And I can help you with – I mean, I can help you with right back and wing back, because those are positions I played. But I think you should try to – not memorize, but when – I mean, the videos are like 60 seconds long. You should watch those videos every day just to continue to get the knowledge. And then I think in a couple of weeks, if you constantly are putting it in your head, you'll be able to understand the central defensive position and the central midfield. I mean, awesome videos though. And he has stuff that are about that. He has stuff about how to as an attacking player, what to do here, here, and here. And also fitness things as well. So I give him a shout out, but I don't know his TikTok name top of my head, but he does a lot of football instructional stuff and is very helpful in all that.
Definitely. And in speaking of Milan, as we mentioned them earlier, they lose 4-3 against Fiorentina.
3-2, but close enough. anyway, so there's two ways about this, because you can say, oh, I can't believe Milan, we're down 3-0. But there's the other part of this is they only lost by one, considering how badly they started. And Milan, I don't think Milan actually played horribly. It's just Fiorentina kind of caught them off guard, and they started quickly. And then it just kind of repeatedly happened. And they got the 2-0 in the bag. And then at the beginning of the second half, they get another one. And Milan are in a bad situation. But when I'm watching this, I'm thinking to myself, okay, Fiorentina probably winning this game. But I wouldn't put it past Milan to then come back and try to do something, because they've been in similar positions before against Verona, against There's a few other teams. There's the only one I can think. Oh, Bologna was another one that they came back from position to get points. So I'm just watching Fiorentina, who's doing a great job. Vladovic balling again against the Fiorentina coach is doing a tremendous job over there. He did a really good job last year with Spezia keeping them up, and he's doing a really good job. And they're becoming the team that they were supposed to be many years ago when all the hype was kind of surrounding everything that was going on at Florence, and they did a tremendous job. But so I think they deserve their points thoroughly. But you know, I don't think this is a situation where like the walls are falling down now, because Milan got into that hole. They got into the hole, but they also got out of it almost. You know, you have Zlatan, I think he scored twice, or he scored one of the goals to put them in that position to come back. And in the end, it just didn't happen in the end for them, as far as them getting the points and coming into the situation and continuing to ride that. But I don't – it was not a great performance, but it wasn't appalling. It wasn't really bad. And even though they got into that hole, they did find a way to get themselves out of it. So maybe that's something to look at. But on the other hand, they did go down 3-0 against a Fiorentina, who, as good as they are, they're not as good as AC Milan. So it was a very interesting dynamic between that, and we'll see how they kind of respond to all of it. Again, I don't think they have too much to worry about, but they do need to fix some things within their team going forward in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, Fiorentina caught them on a bad day, and they took advantage of it. They deserve their points. Luckily for them, Napoli also lost. So it didn't demoralize other things, but, you know, it was a really tough game from both ends. And, again, Zlatan scoring at fucking 40 years old. Still crazy to me to try to get them back. But it didn't quite go their way in the end. But I don't know if it was a horrible performance. They just kind of they put themselves in a bad position, and they put them in a situation where it was too much to overcome. If they had gone down by two, they might have turned around and even won the game. But, you know, credit to Fiorentina. They kicked them in the mouth.
Yeah, I mean, Fiorentina has been performing at a level that we were hoping we would see for quite a while. But obviously, it's nice to see them make those adjustments and really become the team that we knew that was deep inside of them. And I think it also stems from them, like, their president, who had made all those claims and stuff that, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. And then it gets in their head. And then when they don't meet those expectations, the fans get mad. But now that they're finally silencing that voice, it's nice to finally say, hey, it's finally giving the fans something to like be happy about, by just silencing the president's voice and just focusing and going out there and playing and getting those results. So, and especially against the Milan team that is fighting for a Scudetto. So, I mean, overall, Fiorentina cannot be mad at the stuff that they have accomplished so far this season. Obviously, Milan, it was just a bad day for them. Obviously, they did perform too bad, but it wasn't one of their greatest performances either. But obviously, it could have been worse for them if they had finished this match 3-0. But obviously, this is a team that never goes down without a fight, and they were able to get two goals back. But it was just way too late at that point. But, I mean, this was just an overall great match from start to finish. But great job to Fiorentina for kicking them in the mouth for a change and actually doing what is needed to, like, finally say, hey, we're here. We're finally starting to make a stand for ourselves. And that's that's the major takeaway from this match, is Fiorentina and their resilience in doing what is needed to finally be a contender for a European spot. Up next, we have Juventus winning 2-0 against your best friends across the way, Lazio.
Yeah, I mean, it was somewhat fascinating game. It wasn't too much intrigue about it. Immobile out. Maybe the situation is different when the Heat played. But, you know, I think both teams kind of had moments. It wasn't particularly dominant from either side. I mean, two penalties decided. And I know a lot of your fans have been crying about the penalties because, oh, it's Juventus, so they have to make up some justification that we somehow were done wrong. It's just not true. Both of those penalties were penalties. Sometimes penalties that Juventus have are actual penalties, and that's it. And I know the Juventus gets a lot of help in that regard sometimes. They get penalties that aren't penalties a bit. They got quite a bit last year. This is, I mean, when you're that level, you can get manipulated. You can manipulate those into giving you those decisions. But in this case, both of them were penalties. I don't think there's a big debate about that. Leonardo Bonucci scored both. They end up winning the game. But there's not too much to take from this. And I don't want to sort of formulate anything special from this because we'll get into it. But they were embarrassed just a few days later. But good for them in the league, at least, getting those points. Trying to climb. I think they're in eighth now, so they're within an earshot of climbing up, and sort of trying to get back into those places where they feel that they belong. But there are some issues that need to be sorted out from both teams. We'll get into that when we talk about the Chelsea game. Lazio again, they didn't win a big game, which means they won't choke against an inferior team next week. So there's at least that. But it's hard. It's really hard to win with Lazio without Immobile. And I know Alberto's excellent. I know Savage is sensational. They have a lot of good players. But when Immobile's not there, whether he's scoring or not, they just don't play to the same level. And they don't have, for example, they don't have Carrera that they had last year, who's built for a moment like this. Unfortunately, he went down to Inter, so they don't have someone like that available to step up for them. So it was just a bit of not even depth, not having a good number two that can fill in and do something for you, because when Immobile is not playing, they're just not the same.
Yeah, definitely. Without Immobile, no Immobile, major problem. Obviously, he's one of their best goal scorers. Obviously, he had those hiccups last season, but overall, he's kind of consistent. But without him, it's just like they just struggle to get anything going attack-wise. But, I mean, with you, I mean, good job to Bonucci scoring both goals in this match. But, I mean, there's really not a lot to take away that, with the exception of, without Immobile, Lazio are useless, in my opinion, though. But, I mean, it's just Juve. Juve is one of those teams that knows Lazio very well and just knows how to exploit those weaknesses, and they did it again here. But obviously, it doesn't showcase for what happened to them a couple days later. But we'll talk about that later.
We could break it down further and be more complimentary about how they perform and how they kind of eliminated the Lazio attack. But to be honest, I don't want to, because when we'll get into it, but what happened a few days later, it totally devalues everything that happened in this game. That was a big victory for Juventus in the league table, but then they got pumped. So I don't want to make too big of a deal about how they played, because it's not that relevant anymore because of how poorly that they were a few days later. So it's just a bit of it was a big win, but I don't think we need to break it down any further, because again, I'm not gonna go into a whole thing about how good they are when they were just spanked a couple days later.
And the last Serie A match we have to discuss is Roma's, I think it was 2-0 victory against Genoa Salami.
This was, You know, I know that there was a high scoring affair in the Napoli Inter game. I know Juve Lazio was a big game, but this one was extremely exciting, extremely fascinating, and it's a weird thing because I don't know. It's not good, but it also makes the energy of the game go up when the weather conditions aren't good. And if you know, it was a rainy day in Genoa. There's a lot of stories about the game and the injury before it. Roma absolutely needed the points here because they haven't been playing well. They need something to energize the rest of the team. Zaniolo has had an outburst with Mourinho prior to the game, was on the bench, was unused. And my guess is that is why. I don't know too many details other than Zaniolo is not pleased with the way he's being played in the Roma team this season. I'm not going to speak too much on that, but he's not playing well. So maybe he should shut the hell up. I mean, you know, I understand his point, but at the same time, he's not playing well regardless. And you can say, oh, Mourinho maybe is at fault for that, but he's playing in his position where he thrived before the injury. So I just don't see the big point here. But it opened up other options for Roma. He didn't play the game. They changed the formation to a back three, which is the smartest thing he could do. It was a weird dynamic, though, because you had Mancini, Ibanez, and then Kambula, who, I'll be honest, his days are probably numbered in the capital. Then on the outside, you had Karsdorp, which I'm going to get into him in a second. Which he's born to play a wingback position. But then he put El Shaarawy on the other wingback, which I thought was very interesting. But it worked really well, which I was surprised by. And then they had Jordan, obviously, in defensive midfield. And then they had Pellegrini next to him, which I was a little concerned with because Pellegrini's been the creator for the Roma team. And I was a little concerned that being back there probably isn't suited to his abilities at this moment. But he did kind of push up the field. So he wasn't like in the defensive area all that much. And then Mkhitaryan in the central part. And then Roma played with two strikers, Shuramadov and Abraham. And from the very beginning, Roma were in total control. They really didn't allow Genoa to do much. And then there's a whole other thing, Mourinho versus Shevchenko. Shevchenko was an all-time great Milan player that played with under Mourinho at Chelsea. Wasn't a good relationship. His first job in Genoa, he was previously with Ukraine. I think it was ridiculous for him, not because he doesn't deserve a chance at domestic football, but he should not have taken this job. It's beneath him, considering how well he did with Ukraine, but that's rather here nor there. And then obviously you go through and Roma are attacking. They're doing a not phenomenal job. Eventually Mkhitaryan scores. And then, but there was a handball allegedly on Abraham, which it was, but I felt it was a little unavoidable. However, I didn't feel the need to complain about the ref or call this controversy because I've had it up to here with all these Roma fans complaining about officiating decisions and making that the reason why we're not winning games. That's not the reason why Roma has been struggling lately. So I think because of that, I don't want to be a part of that section of Roma fans. I just decide I'm not complaining about anything unless it changes the whole frigging game. So Genoa doesn't really do much. They barely have the ball. In the first 25 minutes, the possession was 94% to Roma. So Genoa had the ball about 7% of the time. Maybe not to the 25th minute, but the first 10, 15 minutes, it was so – they had barely touched the ball. It's in a tough place because the Luigi Ferraris is not an easy place to play, even if Genoa is crap. It's raining, which goes towards Genoa, not against Roma, goes against Roma because that's not their home stadium. Then the second half, things open up and they continue to break through. They attack, and it's just not happening. And I'm like, oh, please, for the love of God, this can't be a 0-0 draw. And there was a point in the game where I'm like, this is going to be a 0-0 draw, isn't it? And I'm basically hypothetically asking myself. And then there's a switch, and Marina looks at it, at the options he has on the bench, and he picks 18-year-old Felix Athena off the bench, and I'm like, all right, let's try something. So Shuromadov misses a few chances, was really kind of annoying me. He's probably the only player of the 11 that I thought didn't play poorly. Everyone else played extremely well. It was very sloppy because of the weather, people getting injured or knocked up and stuff like that. Anyway, so he's taken out for the, this Felix kid. And Felix comes on, counterattack, Mkhitaryan to Felix. Never scored a goal in the because he just came through for the academy. He's played a few games, but not significant amount of time. In 12 minutes, he comes in there, boom, on a counterattack, threaded to him, one touch, bottom corner, and I'm like, oh, thank God, this such a beautiful moment. He obviously his first goal for Roma. I think this is even his first goal as a professional. So awesome moment, and then like Roma kind of got it. And then it's in the 93rd, 94th minute. This last kick of the goal. The ball, Felix is driving the ball forward, and then he decided I'm gonna go vintage Ronaldo, and just fucking launch it from like 25 meters out and kicks it in the back of the net. And I did not celebrate a goal this loudly this entire season. An absolutely phenomenal strike, clearing the deck. The goalkeeper having no chance, scoring twice in 12 minutes for an 18-year-old kid, the youngest player in Roma's history ever to accomplish such thing. And Roma get the points, important. And again, everyone's giving him a lot of praises, as they should. He was phenomenal when he came on, 12 minutes. And it's such a beautiful moment for a kid who, now I'm thinking in my head, if he can play like that consistently, then he can potentially not take Zaniolo's spot if that's going to be a situation, because that was just phenomenal. I've never seen a kid like that come into the team and be that good. And this is the last point I'm going to make of this. The man of the match, as good as he won the game, no doubt, but the man of the match was Rick Karsdorp. When this guy is a wingback, he shreds. As a right back, he's top five in the league. When he plays the wingback position, he goes to number one, better than anybody else. I don't care who you ask or who you're going to bring to the table, because he has such an attacking mentality, but also like we're talking about before, he has the stamina and speed to get back and sort of intercept a situation if needed. And he always get into attacking areas, driving the ball into the box and really kind of becoming that monster. He just goes to God mode in this position, and obviously made my team in the season last year for that specific reason, the way he was able to play at this formation. And Marino made the right call making this formation, the back three with the two strikers up top. I liked Tammy was good as well. But you look at what Karsdorp did on that side. This formation is going to benefit him more than anybody else. And I thought he was absolutely world-class. And if we continue to play in this setup, it is going to benefit him even more and more and more. As long as he's able to play in that position, there might be a little bit changes as far as what the personnel that the Roma 11 that they go through are going to be there week in and week out. And against a more challenging opponent, we'll see how much it works, but I thought it was a perfect tactical switch by Mourinho. Mourinho brings the kid off the bench, scores twice, and then obviously Rick obviously is definitely going to be a big part of this formation considering how well he played. But a game that Roma needed to win, and they absolutely were. Smashed it, even if it was late. The goals were scored in the 84th and the 93rd minute to get the points. To kind of get the confidence back up, because it was draining the last couple of weeks.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, since we are not doing a visual podcast, when Elliot said, I've had it up to here with these Roma fans, imagine just putting your hand above your head and just saying, yeah, that's what he meant. So, anyway, this is definitely a great win for Roma. Obviously, they did what they needed to do to get the results. Obviously this really basically this reflects on how poor Genoa are. I mean, as you just stated, in the first like 10 minutes, only having 7% of the possession. I mean, as you said, they barely touched the ball. And if you're barely touching the ball, it's very hard to find the back of the net that way. Although, okay, I can't really say that there are some teams who barely have the possession and they win the match. But, I mean, it's very slim at that point. But, obviously, this really just reflects on how poor Genoa are. But, I mean, Roma is definitely the stronger team. Obviously, was aggressive with the ball. Defended the ball when it was needed. I mean, just overall, great win for Roma.